Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
Welcome to another edition of Listen In with KNN, presented right here on Fox Sports Radio, 96.9 FM and 1340 AM, where today I welcome in special guest sports reporter Matt Bakota to the show. So without further ado, it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag Listen In with KNN.
Time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
It's time for my Kelsey's Do Good Sports Athlete of the Week Award, where today I'll be honoring someone that's very familiar to the DMV, specifically Baltimore. Yes, I'll be honoring Mr. Carmelo Anthony. Now, the OKC Thunder forward actually spent, of course, a lot of his youth growing up in Baltimore. And guess what? I'm sure you saw all the footage and coverage from this weekend's March for Our Lives march that took place in D.C. and across the country. Well, if you didn't know, Carmelo Anthony actually helped set things up to bus kids who wanted to take part in the gun control protests. He said that he felt like it was important that they make their voices heard in the battle against gun violence. So, of course, reporters had to ask Carmelo Anthony if he was involved in the protest. And guess what? He joked about it, saying that he couldn't be a part of it because he was stuck talking to guess who? Yes, reporters. But he then explained his part. He said, I helped out in Baltimore and the city of Baltimore to send 4,500 kids to D.C. for the march. Yes, 4,500 kids. Wow. He said almost 80 to 90 buses from Baltimore to D.C. Basically, then he continued to praise the students for their enthusiasm, and really he praised them for their willingness to get involved in such an important issue, calling it a special moment. Now, Carmelo was asked if activism would, you know, be a part of his post-basketball life, and he said, you know, he doesn't need to wait for his basketball career to be over to do something. So, yes, he's doing more than just shutting up and dribbling. He said, either you do it or you don't. It's not something that you look forward to or have to plan it out. It's something that should come natural. So I think I'll always be active when it comes to activism and speaking up. I salute you, Mr. Carmelo Anthony. Congrats once again to you, Carmelo, for earning honors this week as Kelsey's Do Good Sports Athlete of the Week, presented right here on Listen In with KNN on Fox Sports Radio. It's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with our special guest because today we're in for an action-packed show with someone local. All right, stay tuned.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with KNN, the sports town of the district and beyond. It's now that time to welcome in my special guest, Mr. Matt Bakota. Matt, how are you today?
Oh, very good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Always a pleasure to have you, especially anyone that covers Maryland teams. I'm not going to lie, I do have a preference.
Yeah.
With being a Maryland native.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's terrific, you know, coming on and joining these guys. Really for Washington Capitals news, especially with the podcast with football and Baltimore Ravens coverage and the Redskins. So, you know, coming on, join these guys, I got to expand the workload that I was able to bring on. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun so far.
Right. I mean, you've been doing great work with the Maryland Sports Blog. And if you don't mind, I want to read just a little bit more of your bio for those that might not know you well. That's okay.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. So Matt Bakota joined Perch Sports Talk in 2015. Created Perched on the Gridiron later on in 2015, where he discusses the NFL with a focus on fantasy football. So, yes, all of you fantasy football lovers, you're going to love Matt today on my show. As a member of Perched Sports, he also hosted Perched on the Gridiron and co-hosted Perched at the Yard. He graduated from YTI in York, Pennsylvania in 2016 as a computer system specialist while he also worked full-time and was podcasting. He then joined the Maryland Sports Blog, which we were just talking about, with his Perch Sports members back in 2017, where he went on to win a Krabby Award from the Baltimore Sun for the best podcast. So congrats to you, Matt, on that. That's a very terrific honor. And he currently writes articles for them for covering the Washington Capitals, the Hershey Bears, the Baltimore Orioles, and the Baltimore Ravens, of course, while he also podcasts on the Maryland Sports Blog. So, Matt, you are pretty busy covering so many different teams with a special focus on Baltimore sports. So with that, I mean, let's get into it. I like to start my Doing It Big in the DMV segment. And I know you probably hear, like me, many people saying Baltimore isn't in the DMV. But guess what? Today we're putting him in the DMV, and we're going to talk some Baltimore Orioles talk. So I know you cover this team, and opening day is coming up. So tell me, I mean, what can fans expect from the Baltimore Orioles for opening day?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to look at. I mean, just look at the, you know, the starting rotation that the Orioles are going to go with this year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of weird how it ended up coming about. You know, we got Cashner, you know, in a move where they were able to bring him in, and then late into spring training, they were able to bring in Cobb. So that kind of, you know, really bookended how the rotation was going to go. But as of right now, the rotation is going to be with Bundy, Cashner, Gausman, Tillman, and then Cobb. Cobb looks like he's going to potentially start the season the first week or two in the minor leagues, traveling around, getting ready. On Sunday, he did throw, I believe, 60 pitches in a, like, simulated game. So that actually went well from everything that I'm reading from different reports. So that's kind of big there. But that rotation is going to be the biggest part of, you know, whether or not they win or lose this year, especially with the division being with the Yankees, how they've, you know, really built up their team. I mean, they've got four or five guys that could potentially hit 30 plus home runs. So the only way to get around that is by, you know, your pitching staff. So it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. You know, as of right now, the Orioles are sitting with a roster of 29 players, but we have to remember Zach Britton, Mark Trumbo, and, you know, are going to start the season on the disabled list. So they're carrying a couple extra guys to get ready for the season. So we'll see how that turns out. But really, I mean, it is a nice looking you know, roster when you get to look at it. I mean, obviously you've got some of the names that you already know in the bullpen with Brad Brock and Darren O'Day and Michael Givens. So that's going to be fun to watch. The guy really, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see in the bullpen is going to be Cortes Jr. He's a Rule 5 guy, so he's got to be up in Baltimore for the season. So that'll be fun to watch. You know, the utility infielder of Danny Valencia is going to be interesting. My opinion, you know, when Mark Trumbo actually returns from the disabled list, it's going to be Pedro Alvarez is going to be the guy that kind of, you know, gets the short end of the stick, so to speak. I mean, he's going to be the guy kind of headed out. So, I mean, they've got Santander and a couple guys that they could really move around. But, you know, you have a chance to potentially move Alvarez out of there and make room for another veteran. So, but that's the way that's going to look. It's going to be fun, though, to watch the catching rotation. I think besides the pitching, the biggest storyline is going to be who's going to be getting the most starts midway through the season and then into the latter half of the season, because realistically Chance Sisko has been waiting for his opportunity. He, you know, beat out three other, you know, catchers to make the team, and now he's sitting behind a, you know, under 300 career, you know, batting average player in Caleb Joseph, who just two seasons ago behind Matt Wieters had no RBIs the entire season, which was the first time for that to happen. So, you know, so Sisko is going to get his opportunities. It's just going to be when and how they use him, but a lot of fun stuff. I know that, you know, you look out there and, you know, maybe the Orioles aren't the most talked about team in a good way. You know, they're talked about being fifth in division. But man, I mean, you look at this team, and this isn't a far off team from the season a couple seasons ago where they made the playoffs. You know, so
people forget that easily, I feel like.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a fun time, and honestly that was actually right around the time we started doing Perch of the Yard. It was right around that season where we actually were, you know, going through and recapping game by game, you know, between the four of us, and, you know, to watch that season and how it progressed. And a lot of these names that we see were either
right.
just coming in into the team or, you know, veterans of this team. And, you know, it's going to be fun to watch this division. I mean, you talk about, you know, the American League, but that AL East there with these teams specifically, with the Orioles and the Yankees and the Blue Jays, you know, and the Red Sox, that is a tough division to play in. And
right.
I think it's going to be one of those seasons this year. You're going to want to watch that division all season.
I agree, and I'm like you. I mean, I feel like the Orioles, of course, we both know they don't get talked about enough, but you mentioned the veteran leadership that they'll be bringing back into the rotation, and you talked about Cashner and Tillman and Cobb. But the Orioles, I think, are a great team to watch. I think opening day, it's always exciting, right, for baseball fans. But I have to ask you before I move on, I mean, do you think this is the Orioles' year, or will this just kind of be another kind of subpar year for them?
Well, and, I mean, I could give you two different answers, but, I mean,
okay.
The answer that I'd love to give you is that this is going to be the team that really makes a playoff push. They're going to, with that push, it's going to help keep Manny Machado potentially. You know, this is going to be, you know, he's right. So this is going to be that season that really could make or break whether or not Manny Machado stays past the season. But you got to remember, I mean, it's not just Manny this year that's basically on his last season. It's Adam Jones and Zach Britton as well.
Yeah,
and those are big
right.
names that you want to hold on to. So,
right.
You know, so I could see that if they're, you know, at that trade deadline to get near the All-Star break, and if they're really, you know, well above 500 and they're scratching and battling their way, you know, what was it, a couple seasons ago, they had one of the most one-win games and extra inning games. You know, they were winning all these, you know, extra innings. You know, if they're that type of team, they really have a chance to hold on and be a contender for a wild card. I could see a wild card best case scenario.
Okay.
The other end of it, as a Perch of the Yard, you know, podcaster, Baltimore follower, big time fan of just these guys, could really see it being where the pitching struggles. That division just becomes too tough to tame, and you get to the, you know, you get to the trade deadline, Manny's dealt away, you get prospects in, and then the rest of the season you're getting young guys recalled from Norfolk and getting their opportunities, and, you know, you have that 20-25 game under 500 finish at the end of the year, which we don't want to see. It's hard enough keeping fans at Camden Yards as it is. You know,
right.
you don't want to see the downside. But, you know,
right.
realistically, I could see them battling.
Right. And I love that you mentioned that, though. As we know, Camden Yards, it has been hard for them to retain the fans there. We saw a lot of cool promotions, right, that they'll be doing
right.
this season. I know they have, like, the 2-for-1 with the kids, which I think is great. But, I mean,
mm-hmm.
how specifically do you think – I mean, of course, winning, right, will keep fans there.
Right.
I mean, that's a simple answer
mm-hmm.
to every sports team and every franchise. But how
yeah.
specifically do you think the Orioles can really retain the fans other than these special promotions and winning to keep Camden Yards, you know, being historic and a great place for fans to go?
Yeah, it's by spending the money, you know, on the team itself. I mean, they thought they were doing the right thing with bringing back Chris Davis, and everyone loved that move, you know, signing Davis,
right.
give him the big contract, and
right.
then what did he do? He really had a down season. He had one of the most strikeouts,
mm-hmm.
you know, of his career, you know,
right.
and then he was leading the league in strikeouts. So,
right.
no, so... To me, the way that you keep the fans there is you keep signing this big talent. You make that
right.
move to keep Machado. You next year you bring in some more pitching. I mean, this was a off season where the Orioles names were really passed around between 4, 5, 6 different big time pitchers. They got
right.
one. You know, so next, you know, the only way to keep these guys in it is to sign these guys, make deals to bring players in, and then you also have to find a way to, you know, rejuvenate and, you know, put back towards your minor league system so then you have big names to look forward to be
right.
watching to move up. So there's a bunch of different things to look at. I mean, as, you know, if you look at the hockey world and you know, it's not so much in the football world, but if you look
right.
at hockey world, it's by the draft, you get big
mm-hmm.
names in, you get all excited. They play
exactly.
well in the minor leagues or across seas. You know that they're coming, and then, bam, you've got fans filling the arenas and stadiums because you know
right,
someone's getting
– following them.
Right. So I think that's going to be the biggest way. You need to finally,
as the Orioles and Dan Duquette and those guys, they need to really, you know, put money out there and get big time players and potential guys in, and that's how you're going to keep the fans there.
Right, and that's huge, of course. I mean, honestly, for anybody that hasn't been out there to Camden Yards, I mean, you have to go out there. It's such an experience. And as you said, though, I mean, it goes back to the organization. But, I mean, hopefully they can get those Baltimore faithful fans back in the stands. So I encourage everyone to definitely at least try to catch some games this season. All right, now let's move to kind of the hot talk in my Kelsey's Across the Nation segment, where we have March Madness, of course, going on, which is always a favorite every single year. And I want to start off with the ladies, because a lot of people forget the women also have a Final Four. And no surprise to you, I'm sure, Matt, UConn women are in the Final Four in the Albany region. And then in the Kansas City region, Mississippi State is advancing. And, of course, who can forget Mississippi State from last year? And then we have Notre Dame, which, of course, has just been a powerhouse when it comes to women's basketball in the Louisville women. So we have Louisville versus Mississippi State, and then UConn will be taking on Notre Dame. Now, I'll just talk about UConn because I'm sure, Matt, they're probably the team you know most from the women. I mean, it just seems like UConn is always so strong. Every single year we have players making shots from the stands. I mean, do you think UConn can be beaten this year?
I mean, honestly, I think if there's a team to do it, it could be, you know, Notre Dame. You know, they've had their ups and downs this season. I mean, as the you know, any women's team, really. But UConn, it just seems like, you know, every year, they've no matter what they've got going on, they've got some big-name players come in, and,
right.
you know, they're battling, and they're winning
right.
big-time games. I mean,
right.
it's nothing for them to win games by 20, 30 points at a time or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously the favorite here, you know, is going to be UConn, but, you know, you look at this, I mean, literally the Final Four in there are the number one seeds, you know, so
right.
they didn't have the big you know, mess, right. They didn't
right.
have the big mess like was in the men's league, you know,
exactly.
tournament. So,
right.
so I mean, honestly, I mean, the easy thing is to say that, you know, UConn's going to win it. But like I said, if any team really has a chance, I mean, Notre Dame is going to be the team to put up a big battle against them.
Right. And I mean, you want that competitive basketball, but it's amazing, right? As you said, they're all number one seeds. So I think we're
yeah.
in for some great basketball. I think, I mean, UConn,
absolutely.
Of course, is always going to be a favorite. As you said, it seems like if you're a top high school women's basketball player, you're pretty much going to UConn. I feel like they don't even need to recruit you. You're probably already going there.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's always great, though, when you have that underdog story, such as we have in the men's, where we have Loyola
right.
of Chicago making a lot of noise
yeah.
as they head to the Final Four. And then we have Villanova, who will be taking on Kansas and Michigan. As well.
Right.
And I mean, I think, as you said, kind of, it's kind of exciting on the men's side in the sense that they're not all number one seeds, right? I mean, from Loyola,
right.
we have a 98-year-old nun who's kind of making all the headlines, Sister Jean.
right.
She has a bobblehead doll. She has custom sneakers. Like, I didn't even know they do that.
it's insane.
For nuns.
It really is.
It's crazy,
yeah.
right? Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Absolutely.
And
it's
then Michigan,
been, it's
you know.
Been fun
yeah,
to watch.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I think it's going to be fun, and you have to. You want her to see them win. She's 98 years old, right? I mean, how cool would it to be to see them win it all? And, I mean, they're
right.
11 seed, right? Who,
yeah.
I mean, I don't, do you think anybody, honestly, Matt, picked them to be in the Final Four? Other than
well,
maybe Sister Jean?
well, and here's the thing, and this is, you know, the stats I like to bring up on my podcast and stuff that I'm on, but literally 550 brackets or people out of millions actually chose this Final Four. 550, think about that. I mean, you had better odds of probably winning the lottery than picking,
right, than picking that,
picking
yeah.
the Final Four. And, you know, it's just kind of crazy. I mean, to me, I believe it's more that these brackets are more of people that probably just really didn't
just
know
pick.
Much about what
right.
was going
they
on. They just
pick.
Randomly picked, you know.
right.
Or you see that, you know, someone lets their kids pick, you know, names out of a hat, and this is just how it landed. I mean, to me,
right.
I mean, at least three quarters of this 550 had to just be random. That's just
oh
my thought.
God.
I mean, there could be people out there that really know more than I do. I mean,
right.
You know, but plain and simple, I mean, 550 out of all these millions of brackets, all amongst,
right.
you know, ESPN or Yahoo or whatever, CBS, everything. I mean,
right.
millions
all the
of brackets out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
so,
that just tells you, I'm like you. It probably was those people who just happened. Like, I saw a tweet, for instance, on Twitter who said her mom, this girl said her mom filled out a bracket for the first time ever, and her mom guessed the Final Four right, and she's not a sports fan. So I think it's like you said, it's just those people who randomly guessed, and maybe, of course, some of those alumni of these schools who for sure put them in, you know, the Final Four bracket. But I like how you brought up the odds, and that's crazy, only 550, like you said, out of all the millions. And, of course, Loyola of Chicago, I mean, they're the big story, right? The Ramblers, as I said, they're number 11 seed, and they're only the fourth number 11 seed to get to the Final Four, because you had LSU in 86 and then George Mason in 2006. And, of course, VCU for people in this area in 2011. But it's crazy because nobody, you know, seeded lower than an eighth seed has ever won a Final Four game. So they have the pressure on them. But, I mean, if you have just been watching this team, I mean, they went from unranked to the Final Four. They won three games by four points, and then they won the regional championship by 16, and then they were last the national champions in 1963. Oh, my gosh, right? So long ago. And then even I like watching this team because, I mean, they had four different leading scorers and four tournament victories. So obviously they passed the ball well, and I kind of like that they don't have kind of that key guy that they need to win the games, and I feel like that's going to kind of be a secret weapon when you can have different people be your leading scorers. I think that's such a fun team to watch. You know, Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson, they've been playing together since grade school. Wow. So obviously the chemistry is there. And then again, you have Sister Jean rooting for you. I mean, I don't know if anybody can count them out. And they've just been fun to watch.
Right. You know, and like you said, I mean, you know, they are the 11th seed. So they've had a tough road to get in. You know, obviously with all the madness of how things went, you know, on that side of the bracket, I mean, they really, you know, had to battle their way through. But, you know, you think about it, I mean, Loyola is, you know, they're the first Chicago-based college to send a team to the Final Four since 1979. And they're, they're a team from Illinois besides, you know, the Fighting Illini that make it this far in. So, you know, that's huge for them. So we'll see, you know, how this turns out. I mean, they're going to have, once again, another battle. I mean, they've got, you know, Michigan, obviously, to contend with, you know, so it's going to be fun to watch. But, you know, they have a lot of history, you know, that we just, you know, that you just discussed. And, you know, whether or not that history or whatnot actually is on their side. But, you know, we'll see. It's going to be fun. Loyola's run is actually, huge for that Missouri Valley Conference, because, you know, normally we see Creighton and Wichita State in that group. And, you know, everyone talked about, man, how are we going to replace them? And then here comes Loyola out of nowhere to really take over. So, you know, and they've got two big guys to really, you know, look at. I mean, between Towns and Kurtwig, you know, 6'9" center. I mean, good grief.
Wow.
I mean, I mean, I myself personally, I have never really played, you know, basketball organized, you know, other than at the Y. And, you know, when I'm going out there at 6 foot tall and I'm looking at someone that's 6'9", I'm like, no, I'm just getting out of the way. Like, this guy's huge, you know, but you have to think about that. I mean, this guy's 6'9". I mean, Kurtwig's going to have to be huge in this game. You know, Cameron's going to have to take over, especially against Michigan. I mean, they've got some big guys as well. But, you know, I really like what Loyola's bringing to the table with this game. But, man, you just can't count out Michigan either. I mean, you know, and the other problem that's going on right now is, you know, you look at just this game alone between Loyola and Michigan, and then you look at, you know, Villanova and Kansas, and everyone's talking about, man, whoever wins between Villanova and Kansas, you might as well just pen them in, you know, as the champion. But I don't think so. I mean, Michigan and Loyola, I mean, just because they're 3-11 seeds, it doesn't mean that they're just going to, you know, walk away from the national championship game and just say, here, you can have it, because these guys battled their way to get to this Final Four, and there's a lot of history on the line when it comes down to it. These two teams, no matter which one plays against Villanova and Kansas, they're going to battle, and it's going to be a fun game to watch.
Right, right. And I'm excited too. Of course, you mentioned Michigan, and I mean the story of Charles Matthew, a lone from Michigan who spent last season on the scout team. You know, he was waiting to become eligible after he transferred, and then, you know, he went through an inconsistent season earlier in the year, but now, oh my gosh, if you've been watching him in the NCAA tournament, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, and they still, while he played 39 minutes on Saturday in their 58-54 victory over Florida State. I mean, he has been huge. He was named the most outstanding player in the regional, obviously, because of what he's doing. And then, you know, I mean, just everything that Michigan has done has been amazing. I mean, of course, you have the senior, Muhammad Ali, Abdur Rahman, who, I mean, what can he not do? I still remember covering them last year in the Big Ten tournament. You know, they had the crazy thing with the plane and stuff. Remember, I think he lost his shoes. And I mean, it's just like Michigan, you have to want to root for it. Honestly, I think their only downfall is that the fact that, I mean, they can't shoot free throws, right? They're the worst free throw shooting team in the nation, right? Which is scary because in college basketball, every single point counts. So hopefully that doesn't come back to hurt them. But, you know, I mean, Jordan Poole, the freshman, you know, I think there's some people that are really going to step up for Michigan. So I think we're in for a good one like you.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Krudwig on the Loyola side at 6'9", but Duncan Robinson is 6'8".
Yes.
You know, he's a senior. He's drained some three-pointers in some games. I mean, he took down, you know, helped take down Florida State, you know, in a 58-54 victory earlier, you know. So that's going to be the counterpart to Krudwig. And, you know, if Michigan has anything to play for, I mean, they could give the Big Ten their first national championship in 18 years. So,
isn't that
you know,
and if any team is going to do it, it's going to be Michigan, right? I mean, you mentioned Wagner, Duncan Robinson. Like, Michigan has some great players on their team. So I'm like you.
Absolutely.
You know, don't count them out. And then, of course, I mean, we have to talk about Villanova. They're probably one of the teams that most people in the country had going to the Final Four. I mean, can you ever count against Jay Wright? I mean, it seems like he can do nothing wrong. He's also well-dressed, which everyone talks about. But, I mean, just the history of basketball they've established. I mean, 5 seasons, 184 games without losing 2 in a row. That in itself is just something to obviously be, you know, amazed by. Then they have 3 guys who are still around from the 2006 championship game. I mean, Jalen Brunson is probably the most well-known. But, I mean, just what Villanova can do is honestly very scary. I mean, Phil Booth and oh, my gosh. I mean, Villanova, it seems like most people do expect them to win it all, and they're also trying to become only the 4th team in history to lead the nation in scoring and win the national championship. So, obviously, you got to play good defense against them. But just tell me, I mean, is this Villanova's year? Do you think they will get upset?
Well, you know, Kansas had a tough game against Duke, but that wasn't their best game that they've played. But like you said, I mean, there's some chemistry there with Villanova because, you know, 2016 championship game, they had Jalen Brunson.
Right.
You know, they had Bridges and Phil Booth,
Bridges,
you mentioned.
Yeah.
But this is an opportunity. You know, if Villanova could win the title, they could have the title and have the player of the year all in the same season, which, you know, that hasn't happened very often. So they have an opportunity here to do that. But, you know, if anyone's going to win it, it's going to be, you know, the favorite at this point, you know, between Kansas and Villanova. But it's going to be, again, I mean, just like the Loyola and Michigan game, there's going to be a lot of things to look at. But, you know, Phil Booth, you know, he's been a mainstay. I mean, he's been the guard to look at, you know. Even his backup, you know, has been playing pretty well too. So, you know, it doesn't matter. They keep rolling, and that's the big thing. I mean, we talk about size, you know. Pascual, he's 6'9", you know, and he's a big-time forward. He knows his way around the key just as well. So, you know, he came up big, you know, against Texas Tech there. He had 14 rebounds in that game. So, you know, they're going to need him to step up. They're going to need Booth to hit some big-time shots. I personally, in my bracket, had Villanova going to the championship game, so I'm not going to back down from that now. And if there was anything for me to, you know, really push that, it's like I said, you know, to start off. I mean, Kansas, they had an issue with Duke. I mean, if they hit the shot there late, Duke does, they win that game and it's over.
Yeah,
so,
Grayson Allen made that shot, right?
Yeah.
In and out.
So, and that was the thing. I mean, Grayson Allen, I mean, he's a big-time player.
you know, we'll see if whether or not he ends up, you know, declaring and going to the draft or whatnot. But I mean, he had a big time opportunity. You can't really say it was a letdown because all season he was the, you know, the man for Duke for sure. So we'll see how this turns out. But for me, I'm taking Villanova to win this game, and I think that, you know, it's going to be I think it's going to be close, but you know, you got to go with the team that's been there and a lot of chemistry for the last couple seasons. So Villanova for sure.
Great. It's hard to count against them. And as you said, I mean, Kansas was so close to not being there. I know Grayson Allen is probably just poking himself for that. And after the game, you know, he said it came really close to going in, and it didn't. And I know that was, you know, hurtful for him because what a great college career he has had. And that would have been the stamp on it, right, if he had made that shot. But as, you know, as Kansas Malik Newman said, he said it was just new life for us. So I'll be interested to see if that new life carries over to see if they can get past Villanova. So it'll be fun to watch. And for everyone that wants to watch the Final Four, don't forget, it's Saturday. It will be on TBS. Game one, which will be Michigan and Loyola of Chicago. Tip-off will be at 6:09 Eastern time. And then game two, we have Villanova taking on Kansas with tip-off at 8:49 p.m. Eastern time. And it will be in San Antonio, Texas. What? I'm just excited for that. And then don't forget, the national championship will be April 2nd. So I know everyone will be tuned in on TBS for that as well. All right, now I want to move to my biggest headlines in sports, Matt, where I want to first talk about Steph Curry, who everyone is talking about since he is out for the Golden State Warriors. And it seemed like before Steph Curry got hurt, I mean, people were kind of just talking about the Warriors like they were a sure bet to win the West. But now, I mean, the Golden State Warriors will be without Steph Curry again as they enter the final stages, of course, of this NBA regular season. And it's expected that he'll also be out in the early phases of the NBA playoffs. Right now they're saying he'll be out for at least 3 weeks. Steve Kerr, you know, saying potentially he's going to be out for the first round of the playoffs because of an MCL sprain in his knee. All right. So a lot of people probably aren't too happy with JaVale McGee after he fell on Curry and caused this to happen. And I mean, he has a little bit of history with some things like that. But I mean, before I get deeper into Curry and what he means for the Warriors, I mean, when you first heard this news, what was your mindset? You know, were you automatically thinking it's over, like, you know, Houston has a chance, which is what some people are saying? Are you like, okay, Golden State has all these superstars, they're going to be just fine?
More along the lines of the team having superstars left. I mean, they've played bits and pieces of this season without Curry, and yes, and the numbers show that they've played maybe a little bit poorly, you know, with Curry out. But you know, you have to remember, I mean, the Warriors, even though they've been injured, you know, they're actually starting to get healthy. I mean, Draymond Green's going to return from a pelvic contusion, you know, this coming week. Durant, who had fractured ribs, you know, he looks like he could come back, you know. So, and then besides that, you got Klay Thompson, he's going to return. So this team's getting healthy at the right time, even though they're losing, you know, Steph Curry. I mean, they have the opportunity now to, you know, get going. I mean, this is a team earlier on the season where the coaching staff stepped aside and let the team run the game. I mean, they made up their own, you know, routine. So when you have a team like that that can just run itself, I think without Curry being there, they'll be okay. But, you know, he's averaging 26.4 points and 6 assists, 4.4 rebounds, you know. So he also is a league leader in true shooting percentage at 67.5%, you know. So, you know, he's been putting up some, you know, obviously some great numbers. I mean, his plus minus is at a 6, which, you know, for people that don't know, it's just a metric of, you know, the estimates, the player's on court impact, taking into, you know, account what he's actually doing against his opponent. So the only people that the players that have the 2 better is actually Harden, which he's at a 7.1, and then Chris Paul, but we all know they're playing on the same team. So, you know, honestly, when you look at the Western Conference, it comes down to those two teams, you know, with Houston and Warriors. So that's going to be the fun part to watch. The thing to watch out, though, is going to be Quinn Cook is going to slide in for him in the starting lineup.
Yeah.
So, you know, in his last 4 games himself, he's averaging 21.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 5.3.
And he doesn't get enough credit for it.
Right. And those are Steph Curry-like numbers in a short sample size. But, you know, they're not losing out a ton. Yeah, I mean,
right.
You lose Curry, you're losing that name value, fine. As a fan of the Warriors, you know who's stepping in. You're not going to be too worried. From someone watching the NBA as a whole that doesn't know who Quinn Cook is, they see this guy walking in and they're like, oh boy, you know, okay, this is the soft spot of the team, but he's
right.
not going to be a soft spot. He's really going to help out this team for sure. So I think that the rest, you know, obviously the rest of the team is going to step up in his absence. I mean, look, they played well even before they had Durant on the team. You know, obviously
right.
Durant,
yep.
Durant and Curry have been almost interchangeable at that point. So they've done this before with one less, you know, superstar. They're going to be fine.
Right.
You know, like I said, they're going to run into Houston, the Western Conference Finals, and that's going to be, you know, where they can expect, hopefully, at that point, Curry to be back. I mean, they're looking at April 14th to reevaluate, you know, his injury. And, you know, they'll go from there. But I would expect that, you know, they're going to take their time, you know, and wait and see how close they are to that point. And then
right.
if they're in any type of danger, he'll be on the court when he's ready to go and when the team needs him. So that would be my, you know, expectation. They'll be fine.
Okay.
And the Western Conference Finals is pretty much set even before the season's over.
Right. I mean, right. They're the one. I feel like, right, you're really kind of new, right, for the West. Of course, the East race is tighter, but I always have been saying this to people since Curry got hurt. If any team can afford to lose a superstar, it was the Golden State Warriors because
right.
I got a whole bunch of them. And they play great basketball together. You mentioned, I mean, even when Steve Kerr let the players coach, like, you have no worries. They were all together partying at Steph Curry's birthday. If there's a team I'm not worried about, it's the Warriors. And then, I mean, he even said it. Steph said, I'm trying to a beat, hoping I can put myself in a position to get back as soon as possible, he said. He said, right now, who knows? He's just trying to do his job and get back as soon as he can. Steph Curry will do everything to get back on the floor with those guys, and you brought up his stats. I mean, he's a sure, sharp shooter. He's, you know, really one of the best right now in the league. So the Warriors, I say, do not be too worried, but I do like it in the sense, well, I don't like it, of course, but I do like that the West is heating up a bit in the sense that I think it's time we had a more competitive West. I think we've been all asking for this. And the fact that Houston is looking this good right now, this might be their chance. But at the same time, I feel like you cannot count out against the Warriors. But someone who actually is counting out against the Warriors is Larry Riley, who, if you don't know that name, he was actually the former GM of the team from 2009, of course, until Bob Myers took over in 2012. And he basically said he doesn't think Golden State can win a championship without the face of their franchise. In a radio interview recently, he said the Warriors can't win it all unless Curry's healthy. If he somehow disappears or has another injury, it's going to be very tough for the Warriors to win, in spite of how great Kevin Durant will be. So he doesn't believe in them. And he even talked about how big of a threat Houston is among other teams. You know, he said, I see it as nothing better than 50-50 if they're healthy. So basically, and he said there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, again, I think this is the year people are kind of really beginning to look at Houston and the great things that they're doing. But it'll be interesting to see with the Warriors. But, I mean, I honestly feel like the Warriors are going to be fine. So I'm telling everybody that loves Steph Curry, it's going to be okay. Just breathe.
Right.
He will be
absolutely
back. All right, now let's move on to another basketball player that has been making some noise, and that is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yes, I had to practice his last name a couple times with 13 letters in it. But, I mean, everybody, it seemed like on Sunday, was watching his 60-minute interview, which, of course, I mean, he came after the Stormy Daniels interview, which
right.
a lot of people were talking about, where she talked about her alleged sexual affair with the current president, Donald Trump. And the numbers are already in. They said over 22 million viewers saw Sunday night's show. Wow. So Giannis, I mean, I don't know if he could have went behind somebody better, but I mean, if you haven't been watching the NBA, I know about Giannis. He has such an incredible story. I mean, he's only 23 years old, but he's just a little bit shorter than 7 feet tall. And they call him, of course, the Greek freak. And if you don't know his story, I mean, he talked about how his family immigrated from Africa to Greece, and then, you know, how for a living at first he had to sell, like, sunglasses and things, you know, for his family to get money. So, I mean, he had a tough upbringing, and then luckily it was a video when he was playing basketball over there that went viral, and people saw just how athletic he is, and that athleticism is something, you know, that has carried him and done him very well as an NBA player. I think my favorite part was when Steve Cross asked him, how many steps does it take you to get down the court? And he was like, full level of the court? And Steve Cross was like, yeah. And then Giannis said six. I mean, could you imagine getting down the court, Matt, in just six steps? I wish I could do that. But that's what he does. I mean, literally, it seems like he flies, you know, when he's making these huge baskets. And honestly, he is the future face, in my opinion, of the NBA. Because, I mean, this man is so young, but can do so much. And he plays with such, I mean, he just plays with such aggression every single game. He takes charge, but also he's a good distributor, and I think he makes everyone else around him better. The wingspan of 7'3" also helps, and then his hands are a foot long. That's not fair.
No,
but, I mean,
absolutely.
Did you see the interview at all, Matt?
I did. I had a chance to watch it, and you know, the funny part about it was he actually joked around after he said about that six steps, because then he was asked, well, how about from the foul line? He said, maybe one leap, maybe none. I mean, I might be able to jump from there. I mean, you know, and he laughed about it. I mean, we got to remember, this kid's, what, 23 years old?
Yes.
You know, it's insane to see what he can do. And he's put up some big numbers. I mean, heck, you know, and not only in the NBA, but, I mean, heck, this 60 Minutes interview was – the highest rated in 10 years. I mean,
isn't that crazy?
So,
yeah.
You know, they said the last time that they had a high rating like this was 2008 when they actually had Barack Obama and his wife Michelle on. So, to have his name up there, whether or not the Stormy Daniels thing even mattered at this point, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people watched it because of that. But, you know, if you watched and then you saw the preview of, you know, Giannis coming up, I mean, you couldn't have changed the channel. I mean, this was an awesome interview. You know, but, you know, really, I mean, before he was a $100 million NBA player, him and his brother were playing, you know, across seas for $500, you know, and that was big for them, you know, and, you know, I just liked how he said that, you know, basically, you know, growing up, you know, his family just didn't have the money, you know, but he said it was tough. We didn't have a lot of money, but we had a lot of happiness. So
he
wasn't broke, you know, but happiness wise, when they were struggling, you know, day to day, they were all together in the same room. They were having fun, but they were all smiling. They were all, even in the tough times, you know, that's what they did, you know. So, you know, we in, you know, United States, I mean, you look at this from afar and, you know, you think about, you know, you're in a house, maybe, you know, an apartment, and, you know, you think about, man, I wish I had more, but, you know, and it's just the way we think, but, this, you know, he really had nothing, you know, was selling some, you know, glasses and watches and CDs and DVDs
and
a bike, you know, riding bikes back and forth to sell this stuff, you know, and he takes his, you know, and it's not even a downfall to him. This actually made him stronger. You know, this was what made him into the player that he turned into and the man that he's turning into. I mean, it is insane to think that he is 23 years old and thinks and feels this way. Because if you ask a 23-year-old nowadays that's in college, you know, or just out of college, a lot of them don't think this way or understand what this is. So one thing that I really liked, you know, besides all that, you know, he actually talked about how his brother and him were playing in a game and he could remember he would be on the floor playing. He'd actually come off, check out of the game, take his shoes off, give them to his brother so then he could check into the game. That was big. So, you know, you really think about it and it's like, you know, kids coming up, you know, playing in the youth leagues or, you know, in high school or college are like, man, I need these shoes. I need the best of this and that. And they were sharing shoes to be able just to play the game that they loved. And, you know, so you see something like that, it's big for sure.
And I feel like just watching it, I mean, it's a true humbleness about him and a true genuineness that you get from him. And as you said, I mean, his life story in itself, I mean, will make you humbled just watching. And I feel like look at your current surroundings. And obviously you see how close family is. But you're right. I mean, it was the small things that made him happy. But the biggest thing I took from that interview is that he hasn't changed, right? He's still kid playing basketball kind of to me in Greece. I mean, even still, if you watch him now, he's not big into that extra big, lavish lifestyle. Like, I feel like, you know, he's still just happy and blessed to be playing the game he loves. And I feel like that's what really resonates him and kind of differentiates him from a lot of other players. And I think that's what made the interview, you know, so compelling, you know, that he's literally grateful for everything that he's doing. And then also he puts his all into basketball. Like, you can see he truly wants to be the greatest. And that's what he's playing like. And honestly, he's well on the way, to, you know, well on that road. And Milwaukee, I mean, what a star they've gotten him. And I know their front office was very happy about the interview because right now, I mean, they're trying to build the team profile, of course, in anticipation of opening their brand new arena, which will be in downtown Milwaukee. Because when it comes to revenue, when you're looking at numbers, the Bucks are actually last in the NBA, okay,
right,
when it comes to revenue. And, of course, they want to improve that. They're building a $524 million building, which will open later this summer. So, of course, you want to fill those seats. And, of course, they want to raise that profile. And they're still looking for naming rights for the arena. But basically, you know, they felt like, and this is what Bucks president said, you know, he said, "We are beyond thrilled with the 60 Minutes piece and how well it was received. It's great for Giannis, our team, our new arena, our city, and our state." So the Bucks, I mean, just fully believe in him. And I really hope he continues to have just a magnificent NBA career. Because obviously,
yeah,
I think we're looking at one of the greatest. I think he's truly going to be down in the history books.
Absolutely. And I thought it was kind of funny, you know, they actually called this the house that Giannis helped build.
Yes, I love
know,
that, yep.
That's going to be huge. I mean, if they
and
keep
the Giannis
pushing,
effect, they say.
Yeah. You know, if they keep pushing, you know, this kid to really become, you know, more and more of the man that they expect him to be there. I mean, I don't see him changing anytime soon. I mean, like I said, he's already making $100 million in the NBA, and that's not
right.
changing his mindset or who he is. And let's not forget, they are still somewhat in, you know, the playoff hunt here. I mean, you know, this was a piece that was about them, yeah, but you know, they're still sitting in seventh in the Eastern Conference right now, so they have a chance. So hey, it's gonna be fun to watch these guys. Then, you know, they make the playoffs, they're gonna get some opportunities. But I thought it was kind of cool that they said that, you know, when they sold their first, like, season ticket, like, that was a huge thing. And then they expected to sell 10,000 season
right.
tickets in this arena. So that – and then, you know, he's the first, you know, foreign-born player to get his own shoe from Nike. So he's got himself a shoe deal for Nike. So it'll be fun to see how that turns out for him and how he'll actually play into that. You know, we see Steph Curry and, you know, LeBron and obviously the Jordan effect and everything and Kobe and whatnot. So he's going to get some big time opportunities here with the shoe deal.
Yes, and honestly, I feel like he's inspiring a whole new wave of players, especially internationally. I mean, his story
right.
compels with so many. And we know the NBA is trying to go international, so literally he's like the perfect marquee player for them,
right.
You know, to show dreams do come true. All right, you ready to talk some football, Matt?
Oh, man, I thought you'd never get there.
I mean, we've been talking so much basketball, but how can we forget about the NFL? And finally, people, we have a new catch rule, okay? So the NFL owners unanimously approved the new catch rule on Tuesday, which was a change designed specifically to avoid a handful of controversies. Of course, we all know this entire season, every one of us were debating on Twitter, was it a catch or was it not a catch? And, I mean, literally, people were getting in, like, social media fights over these things. The catch rule, which was proposed by the league's competition committee and Commissioner Roger Goodell, it will eliminate the requirement to maintain control of the ball throughout the process of going to the ground. Instead, it will define a catch with a simpler three-step process. Okay, so listen up, people. A receiver must control the ball, establish himself in bounds, and perform a football move such as taking a third step or lunging with the ball in hand. All right, so Matt, you heard this rule come out. What are your immediate thoughts?
Well, honestly, who would have thought I could make a catch rule into a fantasy, you know, section, but realistically, this is going to make for more fumbles and, you know, obviously less incompletions at that point, because they're going to have more of an idea of what is actually going to be a catch. The only downside to this thing is it's possibly going to actually make the game longer. I know they're trying to, you know, take time away from the game, but what they're doing here is they're actually making a way for the officials to go under and look at replays more because of this.
Right.
So that's going to be an issue. But, you know, you just go back and look at some of these specifics. I mean, you know, the Dez Bryant catch a few seasons ago against the Packers,
yeah.
the Calvin Johnson non-catch that was in 2010, or even just this season, you know, against the Patriots, Jesse James, you know, decision that ultimately changed the game for the Steelers.
Yes,
you know, we could have seen
against
the Steelers
Patriots.
In the Super Bowl.
Right.
So those three alone, I mean, Kelvin Benjamin had one for the Bills against the Patriots also this season. I'm starting to see a trend here. So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of different angles to look at this, but honestly, by making it simpler, it should help with making the calls on the field and getting the game going. But also, like I said, I mean, now you're going to have that opportunity for fumbles. You're going to have the opportunities for less incompletions because it's going to be one or the other. You know, you're either fumbling the football or you're not. You know, but I do like that how they have with the football move, there's multiple ones. So by reaching or extending for the line of gain, okay, so that's pretty simple. That's self-explanatory. The ability to perform such an act as a runner. So now you catch the football, you either make a move, you get a third step. I mean, all that's included. So now you've made it easier to know whether it's a catch or not.
Exactly.
So now the field can't cause the fumble at this point or the incompletion at this point. You catch it, you make a move, you go down, it's done, play over. You know, but now, like I said, you know, you may be going towards the ground and the ball comes loose. Now we've got a fumble situation. So I say all that to say this. I mean, you know, fantasy wise, you know, for people that are listening for that, this helps. Obviously, you're drafting your defenses. You want to know who has the most turnovers or who has the potential for most turnovers, because this is going to help raise the turnover trend in the league. And then obviously, you know, the guys that catch the ball the most, I mean, you know, you've got your point per reception leagues. This is going to help them. This is going to help the quarterbacks, you know, fantasy and for, you know, the NFL in general. So I think it's fine. You know, finally they got this in. There's a couple rule changes that they added today that I really like that they've done. So there's a lot going on in the NFL, even during the off season, and they've made some good moves. I really like this new catch rule.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and finally, honestly, I always like to say and keep it simple and stupid, and I think that's what the catch rule needed to be, and I think this is a great step towards it, because you always want your fans to understand the game. You don't want them to be fighting over little things like that, and honestly, that was the biggest, kind of one of the biggest takeaways of the season this past season was, is it a catch or is it not a catch? And it got too confusing, even had officials, I mean, you know, disagreeing with each other, so I think this was a great step for them, and honestly, it's great for the game. But as you said, I mean, it's not, you're not going to keep everyone happy. You can't make everyone happy. But again, I think this is a good step in the NFL. All right, now we're going to move back. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
When the entire league, all 32 teams, decide that this is a good idea, it's going to be good for the NFL.
Exactly. It's only a winning matter in that aspect. So I completely agree with you. All right, so now I want to move on to my Kelsey's Are You Serious Right Now segment, and we're going to go back to basketball, if you don't mind, because I want to talk about Leonard Hamilton, his postgame interview, which I'm sure everybody has seen by now because it has made its wave on social media. So if you didn't see, the most recent news coming out of this was that the Florida State head men's basketball coach, Leonard Hamilton, he actually issued an apologetic statement on Sunday for the way he handled a postgame television interview after the Seminoles 58-54 loss to Michigan on Saturday night in the Elite Eight. Now, basically, in the note, he noted his composure and his emotional detachment. I mean, he basically said he had all that going because he was pulled into an interview, which we know is required after games with coaches, with CBS sideline reporter Dana Jacobson, who, of course, has been doing this for a very long time. But if you watch the interview, you know, I mean, she basically began the interview by asking Hamilton, I mean, why did he make that decision not to foul with 11 seconds left, trailing by just 4? So basically, he first asked Jacobson, what was she talking about? And then he went into further detail. He replied, you think the game came down to the final seconds of the game? The game was over, he said. And then Jacobson, you know, tried to get more from him. So she said, I mean, basically she continued insisting on that same point. And it looked like he was going to walk away for a little bit if you actually watch the interview. But then he stayed and he finished the interview. But basically, I mean, he said, you know, in the minutes immediately following, he was interviewed by Dana Jacobson of CBS, and he did not initially respond to her questions as he would have liked. He said she was doing her job and asking them. So I do like that he gave an apology. And honestly, I think watching her, like any person that's done sideline reporting like me, it's not always to get those post-game interviews, of course, because people are in the emotion of the game, right? And a losing coach usually doesn't want to talk about how they just lost, especially if it was a close game, especially if it's in the NCAA tournament. But for me watching the game, you know, I thought she handled it with such class. And then, I mean, she even sent out a tweet where she said, Coach Hamilton spoke to me minutes after an emotional FSU Hoops loss. It was the right question to ask. He showed emotion, and I appreciate him talking through with me instead of walking off. You know, she said he was nothing but professional with me throughout the weekend, as I believe I was with them. So, Matt, your initial thoughts when you first saw this post-game interview?
Well, I mean, this comes down to equivalent to asking a quarterback, you know, how he feels after throwing the, you know, game-losing interception, or, you know, maybe, you know, Grayson Allen missing the shot that could have won him the game. I mean, this comes down to that same thing. And, I mean, the coaches are just as much into the game as the players.
Right.
So when it comes down to, I mean, this is a tough loss. I mean, they had an opportunity to win. Yeah,
right.
I mean, I get it. You don't foul. I don't personally know, I mean, what he was thinking about. I mean, okay, so what, the game may have been over, but you don't show your team that you think is over, because anything's possible. I mean, if you've watched the miracle, I mean, hockey games and stuff, you know,
yeah.
U.S.
A lot
national,
can happen,
I mean, any,
in the last
anything
second.
Is possible.
Right.
You know, we've seen stuff happen in the NBA where teams have won by, you know, being down 6 or 8 points with 9 seconds left. I mean, things happen, and it's just how much you want to put into that effort. So the fact that, you know, he did the interview, I commend him on that, but how he can, you know, went about it was a little rough, but
I
do like that he came back around. You know, he issued his statement, he, you know, kind of got level-headed and then came back to it. And the fact that Dana Jacobson could come back and, you know, back him up and say about how professional he was,
yes,
just shows, you know, a lot about maybe this relationship between the coaching staff and a member of the media. I mean, that is a huge thing. And I don't know if a lot of people know it that aren't in media. I mean, if you have a relationship with a team or a coach, you know,
right,
that is huge for getting, you know, not only your stories complete, but, you know, to be a closer member, to get more information, to know, you know, a little bit more to help you get an edge going forward. So,
exactly.
This is a relationship that obviously seems to be going well, you know, with the team, the coaching staff, and Dana Jacobson, and potentially CBS in its own right.
Right.
But, you know, that is huge, you know, to be able to, you know, get that covered back over. They've kind of smoothed it down and went forward from there. But, again, it's kind of tough, you know, to throw a mic in front of someone that, you know, just lost a game, and especially the way, you know, that they were thinking, you know, asking them why they didn't do something.
Right.
A lot of coaches like to go back and relook at the tape and kind of get more of an idea of why they did certain things, or, you know, maybe there was a breakdown in coverage somewhere, whatever the case is, they like to know before they talk. But, you know, he could have given an answer more of, I'll know more tomorrow, or let me look at the tape first, you know, whatever the case is. But again, that relationship still seems to be pretty well intact, and you know, he could have just walked away and he didn't. So
looks bad, and I understand he's mad in the heat of the moment, and he lost money too, right? Because you win those games in the tournament, you also get a lot more money for your school and yourself. So I mean, I know all that was going through his mind, and then it's always tough to lose so close at the end. And I mean, she was just doing her job, and because I don't think sideline reporters get enough credit for the work they do, but it's not easy asking those questions again, especially after, you know, someone's lost, but it's their duty and obligation, right? They have to be asked, and that's what the fans want to know, right? That's what the sideline reporter's trying to get. That's what Dana was trying to get, and I know he might even not like the question, but as a coach, he's been there, done that, and you have to compose yourself, especially in the NCAA tournament when you know everyone's watching, right? All eyes are
on
you, and then you don't want to have to go through apologies and stuff, and then you don't want that to be the first thing that people remember about you. I mean, honestly, when I saw this happen, it kind of reminded me of the Richard Sherman, Aaron Andrews interview. Right. You know, if you date back to the Super Bowl where, you know, Richard Sherman to some looked like a villain, and Aaron Andrews, of course, and you know, people thought, you know, well, why would he answer her like this and stuff like that? And sometimes there can be a misinterpretation. And, you know, after both of them came out, you know, and basically said it was the heat of the moment, right, kind of the same thing like this one. But I think you just can't do that, Coach. You know, you've been there too long. You're not a rookie, you know, in this sense. So I think lesson learned. I think we can all move on from it. And hopefully other coaches see, you know, that's not the right thing to do. But I think, you know, Dana was very classy and professional as always. And then I do like that he issued the apology letter. And I think we have to forgive him, right? We can understand that he's in the heat of the moment. But still, you know, you just can't do that. It's simple. I mean, you can't do it. All right, now to move on to the last segment of my show that I love to close out with, Matt. It's time for my Woman Crush Everyday segment where I want to discuss Aja Wilson, who is with South Carolina, and I'm honoring her for coming out with something that's not easy, and that is the fact that she came out that she has dyslexia. Now, she revealed that she has had a lifelong struggle with this, and of course, if you don't know her, she plays for South Carolina. She's a senior on the team. But she discussed kind of her battle with it in full length on Sunday before the Gamecocks prepared for their Elite Eight game against UConn. And she actually wrote an article for the Players Tribune, which, side note, I think is such a great way. So many players have been able to come out with things in the Players Tribune and tell their own story, which I absolutely love. But basically, she chronicled how the learning disability was something that she tried to actually hide as a child. And, you know, it was an issue that became easier to cope with actually when she got some help from it. And she said this. People tend to get caught up in the basketball, Aja, and don't understand that I am still human. I go through stuff as well. Battling with dyslexia has been super, super hard for me. I hated the feeling of people feeling sorry for me. When I was younger, I really didn't like talking about it. I still feel kind of weird talking to people about it. You know, she said she wasn't comfortable with it until kind of recently, and it's easy to see that she wasn't, but at the same time, I'm so happy she came out with it, because think about how many other players she's going to inspire to come out and just let people know, you know, I'm human. You know, we all have things that are challenging for us, or things that we go through, but I think her coming out will show, you know, it's okay to have it, and you can still be a great person, be a great basketball player, and still live with it. And, you know, you're just like the rest of us. So I'm so happy that she came out, especially in college, so young doing it, and really leading and setting an example. And Matt, I'll toss it to you now, just to say your thoughts on when she came out with this. I mean, what were your initial thoughts, you know, on how she came out?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, she really didn't use the basketball sense of things to really push what the issue was.
Right.
You know, yeah, she's played, you know, for South Carolina for, you know, for the four seasons. You know, they made, you know, great runs, you know, into the tournaments and whatnot, but that didn't matter. I mean, what she wanted to talk about was her struggle and, you know, what it meant to her and her life. And, you know, the biggest thing about it is, you know, like you just said, I mean, when she comes out and talks about this, she gives other, you know, not just females, but male and female, I mean, gives both an opportunity to say, you know what, I can do this too, you know, and overcome, you know, a lot of the issues. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, you know, kind of like what we, you know, talked about with, you know, a little bit earlier with the interview for 60 Minutes with Giannis. I mean, you know, he didn't let his, you know, shortcomings, you know, affect how he grew up and what he was going to do in his future. And she's doing the same thing at this point. She's not letting, you know, dyslexia and whatnot actually bring her down. You know, she's coming out and talking about it. And that is a huge thing. There are so many people that just deal with it and they just kind of hope that it just kind of goes away, or hope that, you know, no one ever finds out. And the biggest thing is you need to let people know, and you need to get help, and you need to surround yourself by a supporting cast, you know, no matter what. I mean, the basketball team ended up being a big supporting cast along with her family, you know, but, you know, this is huge. I mean, the fact that she could come out and do this, I commend her. I commend anybody that can come out and do this, you know, and discuss their issues, even as tough as it is, no matter what it is. You know, I would, you know, push anybody to just come out and just talk to someone about it and get some type of feedback from somebody. And, you know, you'll feel better each time that you talk to someone, you feel better. You have more opportunities to open up to people.
you know, and it doesn't have to be a professional person. It could be a friend, you know, someone that you work with, whatever the case is, family member for that matter. Just, you know, just tell somebody. And the fact that she did it and has made it, you know, well known, you know, in the nation now, hopefully more and more, you know, male and female will actually come out and do the same thing that she did. So a lot of good stuff, you know, from her. And, you know, the fact that she was able to play with this, I mean, that was even better. So it gives a lot of people an opportunity to really get the opportunities to play and, you know, deal with this all at the same time. So good for her.
Right. And I'm like you. I mean, I think, you know, so many people, right, go with, you know, have this that they're dealing with. And I think when you see somebody else come out, you know, it lets you know that it's okay if you ever thought it wasn't okay. And the fact that she did this, you know, she's being a leader and example. And as you said, I think when you get it off your chest, it kind of relieves yourself, right, when you feel like you don't have to hold it in any longer. So I commend her for being a leader in that aspect. Congratulations to her. And again, I mean, I hope she inspires everyone else that it's okay. But Matt, I have to thank you so much for joining me. It was a fun show. Oh my gosh, it seems like it went so quickly, but thank you for being such a fantastic guest.
Oh, it was very fun. I appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully we can do it again.
Oh, of course. I have to have you back. And then for everyone listening, that's a wrap for this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at FoxSports1340AM.com and KelseyNicoleNelson.com. If that's not enough, the show is available for download on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until later this week, when I have a special NFL draft special, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with K&N from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with K&N, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.